The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
You know the building, you know the gates, you probably know some of the 174 TDs or the 60 senators, but how much do you know about the thousands of others who work there and what actually goes on behind those doors and gates? Well, Gavin Riley, Virgin Media's political correspondent, seeks to take us inside the secret life of Leinster House with his new book, which is entitled just that, The Secret Life of Leinster House. And Gavin is with me now. Gavin, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you for having me.
First of all, the population of Leinster House is not just the TDs and senators. Mm. So many more categories of people who work there day in, day out.
Yeah, about 1,300 people all in all, about 800 of whom are political in that they are either members of the Dáil Éireann, they are members of staff who are attached to those people, or they work for political parties. And then about 500 civil servants, give or take, people who are clerks, ushers, people who work on secretariats, people who work in the journal office doing the transcripts of the day's proceedings mm-hmm. that get put online and published afterwards, committee clerks, engineers and all sorts of other people who are literally involved in the physical maintenance of the place. It's very bustling, and people would be a little surprised from the outside when they only ever see the Georgian classical Leinster House building itself. They would be surprised to think that 1,300 people work in the complex, but of course there are so many multi-stories attached at either end of the complex that it's far bigger than Leinster House itself.
What about catering? Are they staff of Leinster House, or do they farm that out?
No, but I think they are staff of Leinster House, and one of the perks, such as it is, of being not necessarily a politician but working in Leinster House is that the canteens are not subsidised, but they are at cost price. So you get a good carvery dinner for €6 or €6.50 because I think they are staff there, which is quite helpful.
So no excuse for going hungry, and probably a lot of excuses going to the gym.
Of overindulging. One thing that I have found, both in my own experience of getting to know other journalists as they've started and also in talking to politicians for this, is that they get into the habit of going down to the canteen at lunch hour and the carvery dinners are there, and they say, oh, well, I'll have my dinner now and I'll just get a small bite to eat later on. And they go back to the canteen at 6:30 or 7 o'clock
and
they're still
dinner.
There and have another dinner and find themselves piling on the weight very quickly when they get in.
Now, what surprised you most when you were researching the book?
I think I always suspected it, but I was still surprised at how much confirmation I got of how much it's really a fake it till you make it culture. Because you think most politicians coming in probably have experience of working on local authorities, although there are some who run completely as novices mm-hmm. and still manage to find their way in. And those are people who have enormous enthusiasm and massive ideals and passions for what they want to do, but don't know very much about the procedure and find themselves a little bit swamped with how stuff gets done. And then you have politicians who have worked in city councils or in county councils and who are quite familiar with procedure, but have gotten very used to having a certain amount of sway where, as a councillor, you can call up the city planner or the county engineer and say, can you fix that junction, or can you put a zebra crossing there? Can you fix this playground? This library could use a coat of paint. And you can do small things which might not seem like a hill of beans.
But impactful locally,
which people would thank you for. So they run for Leinster House thinking that they might have the same sway at a national level. You know, if I'm a TD, I can call up this assistant secretary, this secretary general, and get stuff done. And then are a little alarmed when they realise that they can't make those calls because the assistant secretaries and the secretary generals will only answer to the minister. And they suddenly find themselves from being a very big fish in a small pond to being a very, very small fish in a very, very big pond, and feeling very disjointed immediately because the stuff that they thought they were going to be able to do relatively simply is stuff that they actually find they have to climb the career greasy pole and able to achieve.
Bring us back to why people run in the first place. I mean, there are different motivations for different people.
Yeah, some of them are almost in some sense to the manor born. They're part of some of the famous dynasties. Even some people who are actually part of dynasties aren't necessarily bred to do it. I talked to Mark McSharry for the book, the youngest of the six children of Ray McSharry. Ray, a former cabinet minister, former European commissioner. And I got the sense that partly because Mark had seen the humdrum nature of some of the job up close, that he decided that it wasn't really for him and it wasn't a huge aspiration of his growing up. So Mark went into the private sector, he got into meat exporting, became the head of the Sligo Chamber of Commerce, and almost inadvertently found his way back to Leinster House because in 2002, the National Chambers of Commerce vehicle decided that they needed a Shannon candidate, and Mark had a recognisable surname and was approached and ran. But it wasn't something of an aspiration of his. And then there are others who feel compelled by family circumstances, like for Simon Harris, who was very vocal about how he slid into politics because he was advocating for better services for his brother who's autistic. Or you have other people who find themselves as part of a jilted generation around the time of the financial crash mm-hmm. who feel like the representation or the interests of younger people aren't properly heard in Leinster House and then become political because they want to make change themselves.
Now, one of the things, you've got to get on the ticket. And that's a complex process.
And it is true. It is often said around politics, but I think a lot of people who aren't political watchers don't fully believe it, that your biggest rivals when it comes to an election aren't necessarily the people who are running for different parties, but possibly the person who is competing against you to get on the ticket, or even worse, is on the ticket with you. Because you could be in, rather commonly now, a three-seat constituency where you might be, for example, a Fianna Fáil candidate who also might have another Fianna Fáil candidate on the ticket, but you're against Fine Gael and you're against Sinn Féin and you're against a prominent local independent. There certainly might be a seat for Fianna Fáil, but there certainly won't be two seats for Fianna Fáil. So will you be the victorious Fianna Fáil candidate? And sometimes you have very well-managed conventions where they decide they're only going to run one candidate. Sometimes they don't. The best conventions, and an example that I came across quite early in the book, which I really enjoyed, was one example of somebody who wasn't expected to win their convention, which should explain for outsiders is akin to the primaries that you see in America, where the party will only run one candidate, so they have an internal vote to decide who that will be. In one instance, a challenger who was not expected to do terribly well at all. There was an established candidate who was likely to be running again, and no one thought that this person would be dislodged. But the challenger had secretly signed up loads of members to their local party branch and had made sure that their membership fees were paid so that when the convention came around and only members of long-standing, 2 years paid up membership could vote, all these strangers file into the function room of the hotel and everyone else is saying, what the hell are these lads? What are these going on? Did they realise you need to be paid up members? Turns out they are paid up members. They come in, they vote for the challenger, they leave, they disappear into the night and they never darken the door.
Never to be seen again.
Never to be seen again. But they were entitled to vote, they fulfilled the rules and the challenger wins and the challenger is in Leinster House now.
My goodness. Now, and you're not mentioning names, and you do say a few times in the book, I spoke to so-and-so, but you don't tell us who so-and-so was, because they wouldn't necessarily speak freely unless guaranteed the cloak of anonymity.
Some of them are a little mortified about some of the admissions, like, for example, how their dietary habits go out the window and how sedentary and overweight they become when they're there. Others didn't want to admit to some of the more embarrassing things, like, for example, when they're new in Leinster House and they hear the bells going off over the PA system, which is to summon people to the chamber for a vote, sprinting down the stairs, almost risking spraining an ankle and landing in the Dáil chamber and realising there was no vote, that the bells they heard were for the Seanad and not for the Dáil. And those are things where, when you've been around Leinster House for any reasonable period of time, you just know them. Those are not remarkable
TDs,
things.
New TDs particularly have difficulty finding their feet. I mean, they have to learn where their office is, they get their mobile phone, their laptop or whatever is supplied. And do they get secretarial help? Do they get someone who's been there all the time and says, look, come in here and I'll show you what to do?
Some parties are better at making sure that your staff are more experienced, or they will make sure that you hire a parliamentary assistant and an administrative assistant who know the ropes and have been there before, so they can be under your wing and make sure that you know exactly what you need to do. Some parties aren't as good at that as others. They like to leave TDs up to their own devices to find their own staff. And of course, famously, some TDs prefer to hire their own family members, which has its own merits sometimes because of how unsociable the hours can be. So having a traditional relationship with an employer and employee doesn't quite work for how the working life works out. But if you bring in a family member, the chances are you get elected as a first-time TD, you bring up your cousin or your brother or your partner to be your secretarial assistant, they don't know the place either.
Yeah.
So the person who's under your shoulder is desperately trying to improvise like you do. And there's plenty of examples of people, even those who got elected 6 months ago, who get voted on a Friday, who get declared elected and get hoisted up on people's shoulders in the county centre on the Saturday or the Sunday, show up in Leinster House midweek the next week and the phone starts ringing from someone who says, my mother is long overdue a hip surgery. She desperately needs it done now. Can you call up someone to get it expedited? Or I've just realised my passport's about to expire and I've got a holiday booked. Can you call someone to get it sorted out? And they're expected to have all of the levers of the state at their disposal straight away. Yeah. Now, but there is no handbook and no one ever tells them who to call or where to go.
But are there those hotlines that they can use if they need to call the passport office? And you and I might be hanging on there forever trying to get through. I don't know how good the service is these days.
Yeah, well, actually, the passport is probably a poor example for me to use because passports have become very good.
But you know what I mean? Do they have a quicker way in?
So they do have special hotlines which are available only to them. So an Oireachtas member can send off an email inquiring about Pat Kenny's passport or Gavin Riley's passport, or they can try and establish where exactly is the waiting list for Gavin's mother to get her hip replacement or Gavin's child to get an assessment of needs. They could do all of those things. And those are hotlines that aren't available to the regular punter. And some Oireachtas members love that because it is their back door. It's the way that they become, they get reputations as being fixers and they can sort stuff out for constituents. And other ones will profess to hating it because they can't understand how the role of a national legislator, someone who should be shaping national policy and scrutinising laws, has basically devolved into sorting out someone's passport, sorting out someone's hip operation, sorting out someone's assessment of need. They hate how transactional it becomes and they find themselves getting bogged down in constituency work when they would love to be setting their sights a little higher.
Talk to me about the bridge.
The bridge. The bridge is an infamous part of the Leinster House architecture for anyone who knows it and is almost completely unknown to anyone else. It is an overground glass bridge that interconnects Leinster House to government buildings. And that is unremarkable most days of the year because it is simply the walkway where someone, a minister who has workspace in government buildings, and they all do, irrespective of their department, they've all got an office in government buildings and they walk over the bridge to get to Leinster House to the Dáil Chamber. But the one day every few years that we're paying attention to the bridge is because if you get the call from the Taoiseach and you're getting appointed to a cabinet, the first way that a lot of outsiders will know that you've gotten the call is when we see you going over the bridge. And there is a smoking area in which a lot of people who are not smokers will happily frequent on the days of a government formation because they're looking there to see exactly which silhouette is the one who's making their way over the bridge. Because if you see Jennifer Carl McNeill making the walk, you go, well, she's got the gig. She's probably in health, as we all expected. The ushers are quite artful about making sure that on those big days that actually the Venetian blinds are closed on the bridge. Okay. So we can't always see what's going on. But the way in which you will often know that you have made it is getting the call to cross the bridge. And even before you're intercepted on the way back, suddenly the phalanx of Secretary General or principal officers or whatever immediately intercept you to say, Minister, congratulations on your appointment. Here's your diary and here's all the people you're going to be meeting. Wow. So often it's a one-way journey because you don't get to make it back to Leinster House because once you're in forever.
Now, the stuff of legend, the Doyle Bar, and not just one bar, there are two.
Often misunderstood that there are two bars. One in which any member of staff can go in or any Oireachtas visitor can be brought in. Sometimes over-egged is a bit of a bar because although it is a bar, it is often busier as something like a cafe because you can get a toasted sandwich or a cup of coffee in there. And often it's not so much booze, but rather constituency TDs who need to bring up constituency visitors, whether it's for a school tour or an older person's visit up, or if you're bringing an interest group and you need to receive them and you want to hear them out, often their own offices aren't best equipped to actually house them. So the bar ends up being the place where you receive them and you get their tea or their coffee or their soft drink or maybe a glass of wine. On the other side of that, allegedly a physical mirror image of the other, and I say allegedly because I've never been in it, because you can only get in there if you're a TD or a senator yourself, is the members bar, which, as I understand it, is a little more akin to something like a local. So it doesn't just have the TVs with the Dáil and Shannon proceedings. There's Sky Sports with the football or the racing down at the bottom as well. Photographs on the walls of rugby teams or the infamous golf society. But I understand that there's, at least until recently, something of a high school canteen code of conduct where only the Fianna Fáil TDs sit in that corner and only the Fine Gael TDs are in that corner and ne'er the twain shall meet until they began to thaw their own relationships more recently. But also a social system where if a minister is sitting at a table, you don't invite yourself to sit down beside the minister. If the minister invites you to join them, like a high school prefect or something, then you can. But otherwise, there are certain privileges that you're not supposed to cross the line.
Now, you do explore expenses and salaries, and you reckon maybe on the face of it, they're not that well paid. Mm. But we always hear about the walking around money, and if they lose their seat, the disappointment money, and then the money to pay for their office and all the rest of it.
And the severance and the pension is very good, and this is where particularly a lot of the anonymity in the book comes in, because none of them want to repeat the error of Padraig Flynn going on TV and cribbing about their six-figure salary and how difficult it is to maintain their lifestyles. But when you think about the cost of living for TDs and senators and the things that we expect them to do, so not just being based in Munster or Connacht and commuting up to Dublin and having to overnight for two or three nights a week, but we also expect them to drive around their constituencies and be seen everywhere and possibly to have more than one office. Take the headline salary is about 116,000 now, but a fifth of it is removed straight away to provide for your pension in future. So yes, the pension is very good, but it comes out of your headline salary. Then you have about 93,000, which after tax comes to about 4.5. Great money if you can get it. Don't get me wrong. Anyone would begrudge them or would love a salary of that for themselves. But if you have to run more than one constituency office, the allowance that you get only covers one office. So if you are in Kerry and you need to have an office in Killarney and you need to have one in Tralee, or if you need to have an office in Waterford and in Dungarvan, the costs of running the second office are probably coming out of your own pocket. And you are given two staff members in Leinster House, but if you need to have three presences, Dublin and two constituency offices, you probably have to hire another staff member. And that comes out of your pocket too. And separately, we all know that the cost of hotels in Dublin has become particularly extortionate of late, but the allowance to cover the cost of hotels hasn't increased. So often they're paying the difference out of their own pockets, or in some cases, as was made famous by the former Senator Eugene Murphy, you know, couldn't afford a hotel in Dublin for the night, so tried to drive back to Dublin from Dublin to Strokestown in Roscommon, where he was based, and just became so tired that he ended up pulling into Mullingar and sleeping behind the wheel of the car in a petrol station forecourt.
So how many of them are double jobbing to make ends meet?
Often the ones who get, funnily enough, the ones who double job are the ones who often got in on the basis of having a local career anyway. You know, if you're the local shopkeeper, the local butcher, Ray Butler, who used to be the TD in Meath West, sold me my school shoes when I was a kid.
Or John Bruton, big farmer.
John Bruton, big farmer. Richard Bruton, landowner, selling land for solar farms. If you have a previous career, you can often maintain it because the career is possibly what got you your local prominence. But now the job is so sapping that once you are in there, with the small exception of a couple who have trained themselves and taken the exams and become barristers in King's Inns but haven't yet practiced, they can't really have the bandwidth to take on another job, much as they might like to, because it might be good to have another income. So if you're Michael Healy Ray and you've got your plant hire and you've got your petrol shop, you're fine. But if you become a TD, the job is so draining and demands so much of your time, you just don't have the financial scope or the mental bandwidth.
There was always the talk that they nipped down to the law library, earned a few bob, and then nipped back up if they were backbenchers, but not, of course, once they get ministerial.
Used to be the case that the Dáil only ever sat on afternoons because almost every member of the Dáil was down in the law library or down in the forecourts practicing for the first half of the day. But now you have the tension between the rural TDs who want to be in Dublin for 2 or 2.5 days and want to try and get 5 days' work done while they're there, which means very late sitting hours all the time. They're always trying to figure out how to resolve, but they never quite can. And the Dubliners, who would only love if it was a 9-to-5 job Monday to Friday and they could go home and be with their kids in the evenings, but they can't because they have to be there late because the rural ones are looking for something to do.
I detect from you that you actually admired these people, irrespective of party, for what they do.
Yeah, I think you need to have a very admirable thick skin to be prepared to deal with the intensity of it. Yes, the money is good, but the job circumstances are very precarious. So I think there's a certain admiration there. And I think ultimately you have to hope for the best for them. Even if you think that they're all utterly rotten or they all have their fingers in the till and they're just doing it to line their own pockets, you have to hope that they act in good faith, because even these small minutiae, like not knowing where to find your envelopes or not knowing how the whole building works, that is ultimately, those things govern their lives and their lives govern your lives. So you need them to land on their feet, whether you like them or not, because ultimately if they're floundering, you might find the country floundering as a result.
Well, there's so much in the book. It's called The Secret Life of Leinster House, including The Art of the Tally, which I know is a preoccupation of yours.
Yes.
It's published by Gill Books. It's out now, and it's author Gavin Riley. Gavin, thank you very much for joining us
in the studio today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.